Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. At just 21 years old, Sophia Ketsier was working toward her medical degree when she left her home in Amsterdam for an internship in Uganda. But what started as a humanitarian trip would end in one of the most haunting disappearances in Africa. In October of 2015, after finishing her internship, Sophia set off on a short safari through Uganda's national parks, a trip meant to celebrate everything she had just accomplished. Days later, she arrived at Murchison Falls National Park, a place as beautiful as it is dangerous. A place where the Nile cuts through the land, where hippos and crocodiles move just beneath the surface, and where, once the sun goes down, the wilderness takes over. Shortly after arriving, Sophia walked to the bathrooms a short distance from camp, and she never came back. Search teams combed the area. Helicopters flew overhead, but what they found only deepened the mystery. Over a decade later, Sophia Ketsier is still missing. No body, no clear timeline, no definitive explanation. Just a question that continues to echo through her family and across continents. What really happened to Sophia on her last trip? Uganda is often called the Pearl of Africa, a place where landscapes shift quickly and dramatically, where dense green forests give way to open savanna, and where life feels both vibrant and unpredictable at the same time. It's a country known not just for its beauty, but for its people, for a culture rooted in community, resilience, and connection. Travelers don't just go to Uganda to see it, they go to experience it. And that experience can take many forms. For some, it's an adventure. For others, it's wildlife. And for a growing number of young people, especially students, it's something more purposeful. Uganda has become a destination for international medical internships and volunteer programs, drawing students from Europe, North America, and beyond. Many of them are studying medicine, nursing, or public health, and they come here to work inside hospitals and clinics, places that often operate with limited resources but serve large and growing populations. In cities like Kampala, the capital, these students assist local medical staff, observe procedures, and gain hands-on experience that they wouldn't be able to access at home. They treat infectious diseases, assist in maternal care, and see firsthand the realities of healthcare in a developing system. For many, it's not just about building a resume. It's about understanding the world differently. It's about learning how medicine looks outside of textbooks, how it feels when it's urgent, under-resourced, and deeply human. And for someone like Sophia, it was exactly the kind of experience she had been working toward. But Uganda doesn't just offer purpose. It offers escape. And after weeks spent inside hospital walls, many of those same students choose to travel, to see more of the country, to experience its landscapes, to take in everything they've been surrounded by. And for many of them, that journey leads to one place, Murchison Falls National Park. Located in the northwestern part of Uganda, about 300 kilometers from Kampala, Murchison Falls is the largest and oldest national park in the country, stretching across nearly 4,000 square kilometers of wilderness. It's not just a park. It's an ecosystem, a place where the Nile River, the longest river in the world, cuts directly through the land, dividing into two distinct worlds. On one side, open savanna plains dotted with acacia trees and tall grasses. On the other, dense forests, and thick riverbanks filled with life. And at the center of it all, something almost surreal, the falls themselves. Here, the Nile is forced through a narrow gorge, just a few meters wide, before exploding outward into what's known as the Devil's Cauldron. The sound is constant, thunderous, a force that doesn't just echo, it vibrates through the ground beneath you. It's often described as one of the most powerful waterfalls in the world. And standing near it, it feels that way. But Murchison Falls isn't just about the waterfall. It's about everything around it. The park is home to more than 70 species of mammals and over 450 species of birds, making it one of the most biodiverse regions in East Africa. Elephants move slowly across the plains. Giraffes, especially the rare Rothschild's giraffe, stand tall against the horizon. Lions rest in the tall grass. Hippos crowd the riverbanks. And crocodiles drift just beneath the surface of the Nile, barely visible until they move. It's raw, unfiltered, the kind of place where nothing feels staged and nothing is guaranteed. And that's what draws people here. Travelers come for safari drives at sunrise, when the light stretches across the savanna and animals begin to move. They come for boat cruises along the Nile, gliding past hippos and watching elephants gather at the water's edge. They come to hike to the top of the falls, to feel the spray, to hear the roar, to stand at the edge of something powerful. They come for birdwatching, for chimpanzee trekking in nearby forests, for the feeling of being somewhere that still feels untouched. And they don't come alone. Tourism has long been part of this park's identity. As far back as the 1960s, Murchison Falls was considered one of East Africa's premier safari destinations, drawing tens of thousands of visitors every year. Even in more recent years, it has remained one of Uganda's most visited parks, attracting large numbers of international travelers. Many of them are young, adventurous, and already in the country for work, study, or volunteer programs. So in 2015, when Sophia arrived in Uganda for her medical internship and later made her way to Murchison Falls, she wasn't doing anything unusual. She was following a path that many others had taken before her, a meaningful trip, followed by a moment of adventure, a chance to step outside the hospital and into the wild. But Murchison Falls carries a deeper history. Long before it became a national park in 1952, the area was known for its ecological richness and its place along the Nile. European explorers arrived in the 19th century, naming the falls after geologist Roderick Murchison. By the mid-20th century, it had become a symbol of African wilderness, visited by explorers, featured in films, and even survived by Ernest Hemingway after a plane crash nearby. But its history is not just one of beauty. It's also one of disruption. Decades of political instability, poaching, and conflict reduced wildlife populations dramatically by the early 2000s. And yet, the park recovered, wildlife returned, tourism rebuilt. And local communities became part of its future, with tourism revenue supporting schools, healthcare, and infrastructure in surrounding areas. Today, Murchison Falls exists in kind of a balance between conservation and tourism, between structure and unpredictability. Because for all its guides, its lodges, its planned excursions, it is still, at its core, a wild place. A place where the rules are different, where the line between safety and danger can feel thin and sometimes invisible. Where people come to learn, to explore, to celebrate, and sometimes to step just a little too far away. Sophia Ketsier was born on December 7, 1993 in Amsterdam, where she was raised as the oldest child and the only daughter in her family, growing up alongside her two younger brothers who looked up to her in many ways. And from an early age, Sophia had a presence that people noticed. She was enthusiastic, ambitious, and full of a genuine zest for life that felt effortless and contagious. There was something about her energy that drew people in, not because she demanded attention, but because she naturally created it. She was deeply social, open, and curious about the world around her, especially when it came to people. Sophia loved connection and conversation, and she had a wide circle of friends who trusted her and felt comfortable opening up to her. People were drawn to her not just because she was lively and fun, but because she had a way of listening that made them feel truly understood. When her friends came to her with their problems, she offered thoughtful advice, warmth, and reassurance, often leaving them feeling lighter than when they arrived. Sophia's happiness was closely tied to the happiness of those around her, and she made a conscious effort to create that sense of joy wherever she went. She believed that laughter and lightness were essential parts of life, often saying, "Laughing is healthy and good for your stomach muscles," a phrase that perfectly captured her outlook on the world. And creativity played a central role in her life. She wrote and drew, played the piano, and had a deep love for acting and performance. For several years, she attended the Amsterdam Youth Theater School, where she immersed herself in storytelling and expression, developing her ability to step into different roles while continuing to explore her own identity. She also loved dancing, finding joy in movement and music in a way that reflected her vibrant personality. At the same time, Sophia was highly athletic. She played both basketball and hockey, and later became a member of the Dutch Student Rowing Club, where she trained and competed for several years. She thrived in environments that required both discipline and energy, balancing her creative pursuits with physical challenges that kept her constantly moving forward. Sophia was strong-willed, cheerful, sweet, and funny, with a sharp intelligence and a natural talent for many different things. She was ambitious and curious, always eager to explore new ideas and experiences. Now, at times, she could be a little bit chaotic, full of energy and spontaneity, but that unpredictability was part of what made her so engaging and full of life. She definitely had a mind of her own and was not easily influenced by others, choosing instead to follow her own instincts and make her own decisions. She was also deeply original, often coming up with clever and unexpected ideas and then putting in the effort to bring them to life. She didn't worry about what others thought of her and was comfortable being slightly offbeat, which only made her more approachable and well-liked. She got along easily with people from all walks of life and had a natural ability to connect with others. In photographs, Sophia is almost always smiling, her expression bright and unmistakable. She was often described as the life of the party, not because she sought attention, but because she created an atmosphere that made people feel energized and included. Her personality was striking, and her presence left a lasting impression on those who knew her. However, alongside her vibrant and energetic energy, Sophia also faced challenges. Shortly before her 16th birthday, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Now, her experience with the condition was somewhat atypical, as she did not experience the usual cycles of highs and lows. Instead, she belonged to a smaller group of individuals who primarily experience manic episodes. And during these periods, her energy would increase significantly, and she would have difficulty sleeping, sometimes developing insomnia. These episodes were often triggered by stress or overstimulation, particularly when she was exposed to a large number of impressions or high-pressure environment. In these moments, she could become both overtired and overly active at the same time, which sometimes caused her to lose perspective and feel as though she was caught in a downward spiral that she could not exit on her own. Despite these challenges, her episodes were rare and only occurred a few times, often with long intervals of 2 years or more between them. With proper rest and medication, she was able to recover quickly, returning fully to herself. Now, importantly, her condition never held her back from pursuing her goals or living a full and meaningful life. Sophia was a highly capable and dedicated student. She was focused, hardworking, and quick to grasp new concepts, which allowed her to excel academically. In 2012, she graduated from Vossius Gymnasium in Amsterdam with a European International Diploma specializing in double science. Although she had once considered becoming an actress, her ambitions shifted, and she decided to pursue a career in medicine. she successfully passed her entrance exams and began studying medicine at the University of Amsterdam, where she completed her bachelor's degree and continued to perform at a high level. Her goal was not just to succeed academically, but to make a meaningful impact on the lives of others. She aspired to become a surgeon or a gynecologist, and she already possessed many of the qualities necessary to achieve that path, including intelligence, discipline, compassion, and a strong work ethic. Throughout her life, Sophia consistently balanced her studies with work. She loved children and spent a significant amount of time babysitting. During her secondary school years, she delivered brochures in her neighborhood, and later, while attending university, she worked in restaurants before transitioning to a part-time role in home care. Now, this work in particular aligned closely with her personality, and she found fulfillment in helping others and being useful in a tangible way. After completing her bachelor's degree, Sophia made the decision not to immediately continue on to her master's program. Instead, she chose to take a gap year, not as a break from her ambitions, but as an opportunity to expand her experiences and gain a broader understanding of the world. Through an international organization, she secured an 8-week internship at a hospital in Kampala, Uganda. This opportunity aligned perfectly with her long-term goals, as she planned to study tropical medicine after completing her master's degree. And her time in Uganda was not just a temporary experience, but a deliberate step toward the future she envisioned for herself, a future centered around helping others in meaningful and impactful ways. And Sophia maintained a close and supportive relationship with her family, who were deeply involved in her life and incredibly proud of her accomplishments. While she was in Uganda, they made plans to visit her, marking what would have been their first trip to Africa together. So shortly after she left, they booked their tickets for October 13th through November 3rd, looking forward to seeing her, experiencing her world, and sharing this chapter of her life. Sophia Ketsier was bright, ambitious, responsible, and deeply driven. But above all, she had a profound love for life. She approached the world with curiosity, energy, and an openness that allowed her to fully embrace every opportunity in front of her. She was building something, a career, a purpose, a life that felt expansive and full of possibility. And at just 21 years old, that life was only just beginning. On August 30th, 2015, Sophia Ketsier stood in the Amsterdam airport with her family, preparing to leave for Uganda. It was the kind of goodbye that didn't feel heavy, because it wasn't supposed to be. This wasn't a farewell, it was a beginning. Her parents watched as their daughter, 21 years old, driven, capable, and full of purpose, stepped into something she had worked toward for years. There was excitement in the moment, pride, a sense that everything was unfolding exactly as it should. The next day, Sophia arrived in Kampala. She had an 8-week medical internship waiting for her, an opportunity she had intentionally chosen, one that fit seamlessly into the future she envisioned for herself. And after those 8 weeks, she planned to travel through Uganda for a few more, exploring the country before returning home on November 10th. Just in time for her Bachelor of Medicine diploma ceremony on November 13th. It was all carefully planned, every step. In Kampala, Sophia lived in student housing arranged through an international organization that had coordinated her internship. It was a shared space filled with other young people from around the world, students, volunteers, travelers, each of them there for their own reasons, but all drawn to the same place. She immersed herself fully. Every week, she sent her parents long, detailed messages, thoughtful accounts of everything she was experiencing. She wrote about her work in the hospital, about the patients she met, the procedures she observed, and the lessons she was learning every day. And she loved it. She loved the people she worked with. She loved the rhythm of life in Kampala. She loved the way things felt different, slower in some ways, more intense in others. And she made a real effort to learn Luganda, the local language, wanting to connect more deeply with the people around her, not just as a visitor, but as someone who genuinely wanted to understand. Uganda wasn't just a place she was passing through. It was becoming something more. At one point, she even expressed that she wasn't ready to come home. For Sophia, this wasn't just an internship. It was a glimpse into the life she wanted. On October 21st, her mother, Marjorie, arrived in Kampala to visit her. It was a meaningful moment, one that went beyond a simple trip. Marjorie wanted to see Sophia there, in her world, not just hear about it from afar. She wanted to see her daughter in her white lab coat, to witness the changes she was making in people's lives, and to understand firsthand who Sophia was becoming. And the very next day, October 22nd, marked the end of Sophia's internship. She said her goodbyes at the hospital, to the staff she had worked alongside, to the people she had learned from, to a place that had already left a deep impression on her. And then, the following morning, she left Kampala. Not to go home, but to travel. Sophia set off on a round-trip journey through Uganda with three friends. It was meant to be a celebration, a release after weeks of intense emotional work in the hospital. A chance to explore, to experience, to take in everything the country had to offer. And for the first part of the trip, everything seemed normal, beautiful even. On the afternoon of October 28th, Sophia called her mother. Marjorie was still in Kampala, and during the call, Sophia spoke with excitement about the trip, about how beautiful it was, how much she was enjoying it. And it sounded like her, alive, engaged, fully present in the moment. But later that same day, another call came in. One of Sophia's Dutch travel companions reached out to Marjorie. And this time, the tone was different. They were worried. Over the past few days, they said, Sophia had been behaving differently. Something had shifted. Now, at some point during the trip, Sophia had shared with her friends that she was bipolar and that she believed she might be experiencing a manic episode. And her friends had started to notice it. The changes in her behavior, her energy, the way she was moving through the world. And they were concerned enough that they wanted to take her back to Kampala. Back to somewhere familiar, somewhere safer, somewhere she could rest. But Sophia was independent, strong-willed. Her mother knew that convincing her to turn back wouldn't be simple. So Marjorie suggested something else. She advised them to come up with a reason to gently end the trip without making it about Sophia directly. To shift the plan in a way that wouldn't create resistance. Now, at the time, it seemed like a practical solution. But later, Marjorie would think back on that moment and wonder if Sophia had already understood. Because Sophia was perceptive. She paid attention. She picked up on things. On tone, energy, intention. It's possible she knew what they were trying to do. Later on that same day, Wednesday, October 28th, the group arrived at Murchison Falls National Park. Now, they had spent most of the afternoon on a boat trip along the Nile, moving through one of the most powerful and visually striking landscapes in Uganda. It was the kind of experience people travel across the world for. Wild, beautiful, immersive. By early evening, around 6 p.m., they reached their accommodation for the night, the Student Education Center. It was a simple, remote lodging surrounded by wilderness. The kind of place where nature doesn't feel distant, it feels close, constant. They reached their destination and began unloading their things. It was a normal moment, routine. The kind of moment that blends into every other moment during a trip. And then, casually, no urgency, Sophia said she was going to use the bathroom. Now, the restroom wasn't inside the main building. It was located a short distance away in a separate structure. A small walk, nothing unusual, nothing that raised concern. And she walked away, alone, just a few steps into the quiet of the park. But she never came back. That was the last time anyone ever saw Sophia Ketsier. At first, no one believed this would turn into what it did. When Sophia didn't return from the bathroom, her friends noticed very quickly. What should have taken just a few minutes began to stretch longer. And in a place like Murchison Falls, where darkness falls fast and the wilderness feels close and constant, her absence started to feel wrong. They immediately raised the alarm, Within about 15 minutes, a search party had already been organized. Park rangers, staff, and others nearby began searching the immediate area, moving outward from where she was last seen. The assumption was simple and logical. She couldn't have gone far. Not in 15 minutes, not on foot, not in that kind of terrain. They expected to find her quickly, just beyond the path, perhaps disoriented, perhaps needing help. But they didn't. They didn't find her at all. As time passed, the search expanded. Flashlights cut through the darkness as people moved through the surrounding land, calling her name, checking paths, scanning the edges of the river. The area was searched carefully, methodically, and with urgency. Still, there was no sign of her. Within 2.5 hours of Sophia last being seen, her parents received a phone call. They were told their daughter was missing. Not out of contact, not delayed, but missing. The next morning, the search resumed with even greater urgency. And that was when the first item was found. A plastic water bottle filled with trash, which belonged to Sophia, was discovered approximately 5 meters inland from the riverbank. It was the first physical sign of her since she had walked away the night before. But it did not provide any answers. The following morning, approximately 40 hours after she had last been seen, the situation became even more unsettling. More of Sophia's belongings were discovered along the riverbank, forming what appeared to be a trail. The items were not scattered randomly. Instead, they seemed deliberately placed. Among the items found were pieces of her clothing. Some of these pieces had been tied to dead wood, while others were laid out on the ground. When examined altogether, the fragments appeared to make up a part of one pant leg. A shoe was found, remarkably clean, 2 inner soles, her sunglasses, a small African purse, and then, perhaps the most disturbing detail of all, her underwear was found high up in a tree pulled over a branch. It was not just what was found that raised concern, it was how everything appeared. There was no evidence of an attack by wild animals. There were no blood traces, no signs of a struggle, and no remains. Despite the proximity to the Nile, there was no evidence to suggest that Sophia had entered the water. Instead, the condition and placement of the items suggested something else entirely. They appeared to have been laid out intentionally, in a way that made them visible and easy to find. That possibility introduced a much more troubling question. If these items had been placed by a person, then who had done it, and why? Sophia's mother, Marjorie, could not reconcile what was found with who her daughter was. She could not imagine Sophia removing her clothing in that way or leaving it behind like that. It did not fit her personality, her behavior, or her state of mind. There were also clear inconsistencies. If these items were hers, then where was the rest of the clothing she had been wearing? Why were some pieces torn or cut into strips? Sophia was not known to carry a knife, and tearing clothing, especially something like pants, into strips would not be easy to do by hand alone. And the fabric appeared to have been both cut and torn, suggesting the use of a tool or a significant force. None of it made sense. On Friday morning, October 30th, Sophia's father arrived at Murchison Falls National Park. And by that time, her friends were already deeply shaken, struggling to process what had happened and how quickly everything had changed. Several hours after he arrived, representatives from the Dutch embassy in Kampala joined him and remained with him throughout the search. Now, by this point, the operation had grown significantly. Search efforts were conducted both on the ground and from the air, and helicopters scanned the area from above while search teams moved through the park below. Local search dogs were brought in, working alongside a coordinated group of police officers and park rangers. And the search continued day after day, and still, there was no sign of Sophia. On November 4th, nearly a week after her disappearance, a specialized Dutch police team arrived. They brought additional resources, including a drone, in an effort to expand the search and cover areas that had not yet been fully examined. And despite these efforts, despite the manpower, the technology, and the international coordination, there were still no new answers. And the search continued for nearly 2 full weeks. And Sophia's mother remained in the park well into November, unable to leave. For her, leaving meant something she was not ready to accept. As long as she stayed, there was still hope. There was still the possibility that Sophia could be found. Now, months passed, but the questions did not. In February of 2016, approximately 5 months after Sophia disappeared, her family established the Find Sophia Foundation. Their goal was to raise funds to continue searching, because the official efforts had not provided any answers, and they were not prepared to stop. There had been no confirmation of Sophia's death, no confirmation that she had been injured. Without answers, there was still the possibility, however uncertain, that she could be alive. Now, Sophia had travel insurance, something many travelers rely on in situations like this. Although search operations were explicitly covered under her policy, the insurance company ultimately refused to pay for the search. So her family had no choice but to turn to the public. Donations came in from people all over the world, individuals who had heard Sophia's story and wanted to help in any way they could. Now, with those funds, her family was able to organize additional search efforts. But even then, still, nothing was found. In June, her family returned to Uganda once again. They retraced Sophia's journey, following the same route she had taken starting on October 23rd. They experienced the same long drives over difficult roads, the same physical exhaustion, and the same conditions she would have faced after 8 demanding weeks of work in the hospital. It was a difficult journey, both physically and emotionally. And it made one thing even clearer. Sophia had been pushing forward, continuing to explore, continuing to live fully, despite everything she had already given herself. And her mother continues to return to Uganda again and again. In fact, she's been there more than 20 times since Sophia disappeared. Because for her, this story does not have an ending. She's still searching for answers, for truth, and for her daughter. And after all this time, Sophia Ketsier is still missing. Now, in the days and weeks after Sophia disappeared, an explanation began to take shape. Not because it had been proven, but because it was the simplest and most convenient conclusion to reach. Based on the initial searches, local police and members of the search team assumed that Sophia must have had an accident and somehow ended up in the river. The powerful current of the Nile would have led to a fatal outcome. In a place like Murchison Falls, where the river moves fast and the terrain can be unpredictable, it is easy to imagine how quickly something could go wrong. And for many, that explanation seemed to fit. But there was a fundamental problem with that theory. There was no evidence that Sophia had ever entered the river. No witnesses, no physical traces, and no remains. And for her parents, that absence of proof was impossible to ignore. Without confirmation of what had actually happened, they were left with uncertainty. And as long as that uncertainty remained, they refused to accept that the case was closed. Now, at the same time, another narrative began to emerge, one that quickly gained traction among investigators. Sophia had bipolar disorder, and it was suggested that she may have been experiencing a manic episode at the time of her disappearance. Now, from there, a conclusion seemed to form almost immediately, that she had become disoriented or irrational, and she must have done something reckless that led to her death. Now, for her family, this explanation not only felt incomplete, but dismissive. It reduced Sophia to a diagnosis and overlooked the reality of who she was, while also failing to account for the physical evidence that had been found. More importantly, it raised a critical question. If no one truly knew what happened, how could alternative scenarios, especially the possibility of a crime, be so quickly ruled out? From the beginning, the case was filled with gaps, and many of those gaps were never fully examined. One of the earliest alternative theories suggested that Sophia had been attacked by a wild animal, which on the surface seemed plausible given the environment. Murchison Falls is home to crocodiles, hippos, lions, leopards, elephants, and Cape buffalo, all animals capable of causing serious harm or death. However, the evidence did not support that theory. There were no blood traces, no signs of a struggle, and no remains, all of which would typically be expected in the case of an animal attack. And each of these animals behaves in a specific and well-documented way. Hippos are known to attack and drown, but not consume, leaving a body behind. While crocodiles may prey on humans, they often leave clothing or remains along the riverbanks. Predators like lions and leopards leave clear indicators of an attack, including disturbed ground, drag marks, and visible trauma. None of those signs were present. Instead, what investigators found told a very different story. Sophia's belongings appeared to have been placed deliberately, not scattered randomly as one would expect in the case of an accident or animal attack. Pieces of her clothing had been cut or torn into strips and arranged along the riverbank, some tied to branches and others laid out on the ground in a way that made them easy to see. This pattern is not consistent with natural causes. It also did not align with the idea that Sophia had simply become lost. If someone becomes lost in the wilderness, they don't remove their clothing, especially not in an environment where that clothing is essential for protection. Additionally, if she had been attempting to mark her path, the items would have been placed in a way that indicated direction, typically tied at eye level or positioned to guide rescuers, rather than scattered low to the ground in fragmented and inconsistent ways. There were also environmental factors that made the lost theory difficult to support. Sophia's friends had remained nearby and played loud music in an effort to help her find her way back. And in the quiet conditions of the surrounding landscape, sound is known to travel long distances. From the location where her belongings were found, she would likely have been able to hear them and return, unless something prevented her from doing so. Now, the condition of her water bottle provided another important detail. It was found still filled with trash, which suggests that Sophia had not taken the time to empty it and use it for drinking, something that would be expected if she had been wandering for an extended period of time. Now, this detail points to the likelihood that whatever happened to her occurred quickly, before she had the opportunity to take even basic survival steps. The pattern of the recovered items raised additional concerns. A single, clean boot was found, along with both of the boot's inner soles, as well as her empty purse and other personal belongings, all of which appeared to have been spread out in a way that could be interpreted as an attempt to simulate an animal attack. However, the distribution and condition of these items did not align with how evidence would typically be found in such a scenario. Notably, only clothing associated with her lower body, such as her pants, underwear, and footwear, was recovered, while no garments from her upper body were ever found. This absence is significant, as upper body clothing would be the most likely to contain evidence of trauma, such as blood or damage, particularly if a weapon had been used or if there had been a struggle. Additionally, the condition of the clothing was not consistent with an accidental fall into the river, as she would have remained fully clothed in such a scenario. Now, as time went on, Sophia's family began to seek answers independently. They arranged for DNA testing to be conducted on the items that had been recovered, and the results introduced an entirely new and deeply concerning element to the case. Significant amounts of male DNA were found on the clothing and belongings, including the presence of at least one unknown male and possibly more. Now, to investigate further, DNA samples were collected from 7 local Ugandan police officers who had been involved in the original investigation, but none of them matched the DNA found on the evidence. This meant that the DNA belonged to someone else, someone who had not been identified. Based on these findings, experts concluded that the volume and presence of this unknown DNA strongly contradicted the theories of suicide, accident, or animal attack, and instead supported the possibility that other individuals had been involved. Around that same time, new information emerged about the environment surrounding Sophia at the time of her disappearance. While the location had initially been described as isolated, it was later discovered that there were multiple groups of people in the area. Uganda Wildlife Authority trainers and members of the Ugandan People's Defense Force were present as part of a training program. And approximately 400 recruits were staying at a camp located just 2 kilometers north of the center where Sophia had been. This meant that the area was not as remote as originally believed, and that there were numerous individuals, many of them men, in close proximity. This context raises additional concerns when considered alongside broader patterns. Reports from the United Nations have highlighted that violence against women, including femicide, is a growing issue in Uganda, and that human trafficking has also been on the rise, with cases increasing significantly in recent years. While these realities do not provide direct answers, they do form part of the larger context in which Sophia disappeared. In 2022, a new police investigation into Sophia's disappearance was launched in Uganda, offering renewed hope that new information might come to light. However, the process proved to be slow and at times frustrating for the family, as they were largely kept in the dark throughout the investigation, and a report was not released until 18 months later. One key detail that emerged during this investigation involved Sophia's tour guide and driver. It was discovered that he had not been licensed to work as a tour guide at the time of the trip in 2015, and that he did not obtain a license until 2019. Although operating without a license was not uncommon at the time. The prosecution initially pursued a case against him citing negligence, and the family supported this, particularly after learning that another traveler and another guide had raised concerns about Sophia's well-being to the guide during the trip, describing her as vulnerable. And these concerns were not taken seriously. However, the case against the guide was ultimately withdrawn as licensing was not legally required in 2015. Once again, a potential avenue for accountability disappeared. Now, when all of these elements are considered together, the lack of evidence supporting an accident or animal attack, the deliberate placement of clothing, the presence of unknown DNA, the proximity of other individuals, and the gaps in the investigation, one conclusion becomes increasingly difficult to ignore, meaning that foul play cannot be ruled out. In fact, it may be the only explanation that fully accounts for the evidence. Because Sophia Ketsier did not simply wander away. Something happened. Something that interrupted her path in a matter of moments, leaving behind fragments of a story, but no clear answers. And after all this time, what remains is not closure, but a question. What really happened to Sophia on her last trip? There's a moment before any trip like this where everything feels full of possibility. You're stepping into something new. A different country, a different culture, a different way of life. And for so many travelers, especially young women traveling alone or with friends, places like Uganda offer something deeply meaningful. Not just adventure, but purpose, connection, growth. Uganda is often described as welcoming, warm, and community-centered. And many travelers do experience that. The culture places a strong emphasis on hospitality, respect, and human connection, and visitors are often met with kindness and curiosity. At the same time, it's important to understand that cultural norms can be different, particularly when it comes to gender roles, personal space, and the expectations of behavior in public. Dressing modestly, being aware of how you're perceived, and understanding local customs can help travelers move more safely and respectfully through unfamiliar environments. So alongside that warmth, there are realities that travelers need to be aware of. Uganda, like many countries, has areas that are safe and areas that require caution. And crime does exist, particularly in urban areas and tourist zones, just like every other place in the world. Petty crimes such as pickpocketing and theft is common, but more serious incidents, including robbery and assault, have also been reported, sometimes targeting travelers who are unfamiliar with their surroundings. Now, for women, those risks can look different. Traveling as a woman, especially a young foreign woman, can draw attention, both welcome and unwanted. Reports from international organizations have noted that harassment, including unwanted attention or advances, can occur, particularly when traveling alone or in isolated areas. Now, while many women travel safely through Uganda every year, situational awareness becomes critical. Knowing where you are, who is around you, and how quickly your environment can change. And then there are the environments themselves. Places like national parks, beautiful, remote, and unforgettable. They also come with a different set of risks. Wildlife is unpredictable. Terrain can be difficult. Communication is limited. And distances that seem short on a map can feel very different on the ground, especially in unfamiliar conditions. Even something as simple as stepping away from a group, walking alone after dark, or heading to a nearby structure can carry more risk than it would in a more controlled setting. Travel advisories consistently emphasize a few key principles for places like this. Stay with your group whenever possible. Avoid walking alone, especially at night or in isolated areas. Let someone know where you're going, even for short distances, and trust your instincts if something feels off. Because often, it's not one big decision that leads to danger. It's a series of small, ordinary moments. A short walk, a quick detour, a decision that feels routine, until it isn't. There are also structural factors that travelers don't always see. Access to emergency services may be limited in remote areas, response times can be longer. And in some cases, investigations may not have the same resources or urgency that travelers expect from home. Now, that doesn't mean travel like this shouldn't happen. It just means it requires preparation. Research the area. Choose licensed guides and verified organizations. Check credentials, even when something feels informal or common. Keep communication open with family or friends. And have a plan. Not just for the trip itself, but for what to do if something happens. Sophia did so many things right. She planned her trip. She worked through a recognized organization. She stayed connected with her family. And still, something happened. That's the part that stays with you. Because safety isn't about fear. It's about awareness. It's about understanding that even in places filled with beauty, purpose, and opportunity, there are layers. And the more you understand about those layers, the more you can protect yourself and the people you travel with. Travel can change your life. It can open your world in ways nothing else can. But it also asks something of you in return. Attention, preparation, and the willingness to pause, even in the most ordinary moment, and ask, is this safe? Sophia Ketsier was just 22 years old when she disappeared. A young woman with dark blonde hair, brown-green eyes, and a height of about 1.76 meters, who had her entire life ahead of her. She is still missing, but missing does not mean gone. And there are cases where people are found years later, sometimes when hope feels like it should have run out. If you were in Uganda in October 2015, if you traveled through Murchison Falls National Park, or if you remember anything at all, no matter how small or insignificant it may seem, that information could matter more than you realize. Someone, somewhere, knows something. If that's you, please come forward and contact her family at contact@findsophia.org. Because after all this time, they are still searching, still hoping, and still waiting for answers. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram @TheLastTripCrimePod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.